significance of Yerushalayim is to us. You know, because you think about Eretz Yisrael, there's no question, the whole land is a holy land. So what, is Yerushalayim any better necessarily than, you know, than any other part of the land? So I'll start by sharing with you a very interesting thing that the Chassam Sofer explains. He says, let's go back to when Avram was promised the land. Right, Lech Lecha Me'aretzecha. Avram's told, leave your homeland. And where are you heading? El Aretz Asher Eka, to the land that I'm going to show you. Now, you don't actually find that God ever shows him the land. At a later point, Hashem says to him, Avram's kind of like wandering around, kind of feeling his way out. Suddenly he arrives somewhere, and Hashem says, oh, okay, this is the place I'm going to give your children. He says it to him, but it doesn't really show him anything. The pasuk says, El Aretz Asher Eka, to the land that I'm going to show you. As if to say that there, you know, there's going to be some tangible, physical, visible sign that you've come to the place. So Hashem says, okay, you're at the place, you've arrived. But he doesn't show him anything. El Aretz Asher Eka, the Torah speaks precisely. It doesn't say the land I'm going to tell you, the land I'm going to show you. Okay, and what happens right after that? Vayetak Misham Ahara. Avram relocates. Hashem says, this is the land. And next thing you know, Avram's moving on. He's moving here, he's moving to Besa, right? Moving around. What's going on? If he's found the place, so why is he still traveling? And the third question that we could ask is that shortly after he arrives in the land, there's a famine in the land. And next thing you know, Avram abandons the land and he's heading down to Mitzrayim. So you really have three questions. Question number one, Hashem says to Avram, I'm going to show you the land, and you never find that he shows him. Question number two, when he tells him, oh, we've made it, we're here. Next thing you know, Avram, vayetak misham. Yetak is a very strong language of you know, uprooting oneself and relocating. So obviously, Avram felt he wasn't really quite there yet. And question three, again, the Ramban's critique of Avraham, it's really wrong. Hashem promises you come to the land, I'll take care of you, I'll provide you with food. There's a famine, and Avram all of a sudden he's panicking and he's out of there. Where's your faith? You know, the Ramban even goes so far as to say that the reason the Jews end up in Mitzrayim, it sounds a little unfair almost and slightly overwhelming, but the reason the Jews have to go into Mitzrayim, 210 years of hard labor in Mitzrayim, is because Avram, right, Ma'asa Avo Simon Labanim, what happens to the fathers happens to the children. Avram, you showed a lack of faith, a lack of trust in God to stay in Eretz Yisrael when there's a famine. So God says, you went to Mitzrayim by choice, your children are going to be forced to go to Mitzrayim. Can you imagine? All the atrocities the Jews suffered in Mitzrayim, all because Avram was hungry and he picked up and left. So some say, what do you mean? Ein somcha al nes, he did the right thing. You can't sit there, rely on a miracle. You're going to sit there in Eretz Yisrael starving. So others say, no. If God promises you, go to this land, I'm going to give you a blessing. He's going to certainly provide you with food. He's not going to leave you without food. Right? So Avram should have stuck it out. And because he didn't have the faith to stick it out, his children are punished with Galus Mitzrayim. So it's pretty significant. So again, these are the three questions, just to review for those who just walked in. Question one, Hashem says to Avram, Lech lecha me'aretzecha, to the land I'm going to show you, and he never shows him the land. He never shows him. He tells him about the land, but he never shows it to him. Question two, immediately after God says, this is the place, next thing you know, Avram's relocating. He's still moving around. So obviously, he's still looking for something else. What was he looking for in the land? And question three, can we perhaps defend Avram's actions of leaving the land during the famine? Ramban is very critical of Avram for doing such. So can we perhaps defend Avram? So the answer really is found by Akedas Yitzchak. When you come to Akedas Yitzchak, Avram's traveling around again, he's wandering around for 3 days, and all of a sudden, Vayar es hamako merachok, he sees the place from a distance. What did he see? So Rashi says, he saw a cloud, right? Like that light beam, like, right? Maybe that angelic voice, right? Like, descending from on high. He says, oh, that's the spot that God is sending me to. So some explain that, the Chassam Sofer explains, the moment that we come to the fulfillment of Lech Lecha Me'aretzecha, to the land I will show you, doesn't take place when Avram first comes to Eretz Yisrael. The only point when Avram finally achieves the land that I will show you is when he sees that cloud over the mountain. What mountain? Over the mountain of the Beis HaMikdash. When he comes to Yerushalayim. And the Chassam Sofer essentially says that you have not yet experienced Eretz Yisrael until you've experienced Yerushalayim. And one of my students was telling me over Pesach, his family was in Tveria. And he says they hardly got to Yerushalayim until the end of their trip. And he said, the whole trip I felt like I wasn't really in Eretz Yisrael. And I said, that makes a lot of sense, because if you understand that Yerushalayim is the heart and soul of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, 1948 was wonderful, but until you come to Yom Yerushalayim, right? Until you have the ability to come to the Kotel and to stand in the place, you know, as close as, you know, physically possible to the Makom HaMikdash, you're not fully tapping into the spiritual properties of Eretz Yisrael. So the Chassam Sofer says that answers our question. Question number one, again, El Aretz Asher Eka, to the land that I will show you, it doesn't take place when he first arrives in the land. Hashem's only telling him at that point. When does he finally show him the land? The part of the land that's most desirable, Yerushalayim, at Akedas Yitzchak. Question two, why is Avram still traveling around when Hashem first says, oh, now you're in the land? Because he's not fully in the land. He's looking for more. He's searching for Yerushalayim. He says, I want, yes, okay, Hashem, I understand this is generally where you want me to be. But show me what it's all about. Take me to the place that's the heart and soul of this land. Right? And that's why Avram, Vayetak Misham, he's still wandering, he's still looking for more. And that perhaps is a defense for Avram's actions. Why is he allowed to leave the land after arriving in the land? He goes to Mitzrayim during the famine. God said, I'm going to make you great in the land that I will show you. That's not the land that I will show you. Until he gets to Yerushalayim, he can come to Israel and then leave. It's only once he sees Yerushalayim, now he's there to stay. Now he's really experienced Eretz Yisrael. You know, so it gives us some perspective on what Yerushalayim. Again, Eretz Yisrael, in its entirety, we're thankful for, and it's obviously the Kedusha can be felt. But there's something very unique and special that a Jew feels in Yerushalayim. Yeah?
I don't know if I shared it with you or not, but I heard Rabbi Mansour, this rabbi of the Syrian community, gave a beautiful Dvar Torah about that Abraham and Sarai had to set the footprints for what the children will follow. And that they had to walk the whole land. Mm-hmm. This ultimately belongs to us, so they're setting the precedent. And they had to go to Egypt because they saw in Ruach HaKodesh that the children, the Bnei Israel, are going to be in Egypt.
So flipping around the other way instead of.
They needed to be there in order to determine or predetermine how Bnei Israel will act. Mm-hmm. And Abraham and Sarai needed to say that they were brother and sister so that Paro will try. And Abraham knew that Sarai had greater capabilities as a prophetess than him, and she indeed called upon the four angels to help her when Pharaoh came to her.
Right.
And that's how Pharaoh knew that Sarah was more than just Abraham's sister, because Michael, Gabriel, Uriel, and Raphael came to her aid. And they played Pharaoh with all these makot, which was a prelude to the Aseret Makot, that the Pharaoh that we come to know with the Aseret Makot experienced later on. And in all the years, the 210 years that Bnei Israel lived in Egypt, we have only one occurrence of a woman being accosted by Egyptians. How come there was no more intermarriage, and how come there was no more relationships? Because Abraham and Sarai said it. And that's the beauty of it. And when they left Egypt, they took stuff from Paro. That's why when they leave Baruchush Gadol, Egypt, they left because they knew that they would have to prepare for Bnei Israel. But when they come to the kings and the four kings, which are the five kings, and other wars, they take nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of it. That, you know, the flip side is, right, yes, Yerushalayim, once they reach Yerushalayim, they can't go out.
Right.
And then Rabbi Mansour asked, then how come we have such intermarriage and difficulties in America? And the answer is, he said the precedent that it's not acceptable. I just thought it was cute how he played on it. That everything that they experienced, they set up for Yaakov and for the children, Bnei Israel, to experience. And they sort of paved the way.
That's a nice way to flip it around. Because Ramban is saying, because Avram messed up by going to Mitzrayim, the children have to go. So that's flipping it around more positively. No, Avram went there to ensure that when he knew his children would be there and to give them that protection, he paved the way.
Right.
That's very good. Okay, but just to expand it even one step further. You know, Yerushalayim is the place that represents our Amunah. Right? It's really, again, it's the heart and soul of the Jewish people. It's the backbone of everything we believe in. You know, the world was formed from Yerushalayim, if you think about it. The Eben Shesiyah, the foundation stone, right, in the Kodesh HaKadashim. That's the starting point of the universe. Physically, that's where the world was created from. So that when the Gemara says that Israel is the tallest point in the world, and Yerushalayim in particular, and Har Habayis in particular, and someone will raise their hand and say, geographically that's not correct. So the answer is, one answer that's given, is that if you understand that when God physically formed the world, right, this was the Eben Shesiyah, the foundation stone, Har Habayis, and the world was built downward around it, meaning depending on how you position the globe, right, so again, it may not be geographically, you'll say there are mountains that are much taller than Har Habayis in the world. But if you understand that that's the peak, that's the starting point, everything is built down around it, so that's really that's the top, that's the foundation. Yerushalayim represents in place the foundation of the world. As Jews, what's the foundation of a Jew? Meaning, let's take this concept. You know, we have this concept in Kabbalah and Hasidus that everything exists both in time and person and in place. So if Yerushalayim is in place, the foundation of everything, right? The Beis Hamikdash is the place that's the foundation of everything. In a Jew, what's the foundation of a Jew? So say Torah. Well, that's too general. I mean, what mitzvah in particular? What's the backbone of our Judaism? Right, so the answer is Emunah.
Belief
in Hashem. The Ramban says, you know, the Rambam says the first mitzvah that Hashem says at Har Sinai, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the first mitzvah is to believe in God. That's what the Rambam says. The Ramban says, no, it's even more than that. It's a prerequisite to mitzvahs. How can I ask you to do mitzvahs if you don't believe in God? How can the first mitzvah be to believe in me? Well, if I don't believe in you, then I don't have to listen to you. So before you can even command, the Ramban says, you have to be willing to believe. Right? So the foundation of every Jew is what? Is this inherent belief in God. Now, which person represents that? So again, so the foundation of mitzvos is Emunah, right? That's why the Gemara says, and the Gemara has a very interesting discussion at the end of Makos, different Nevi'im, who are trying to summarize the Torah. I can get it down to 11 key points. I can get it down to 5, to 3, to 2, right? Comes along Habakkuk from Treyasar. The Navi Habakkuk says, if I have to sum up the Torah in one thing, v'tzadik be'emunaso yichya, a tzadik lives by Emunah. Amich kulam tzaddikim. Every Jew is a tzaddik, right? The backbone of what it means to be a Jew is to have a emunah, to have faith in God. Which person in history, who's the foundation of the Jewish people in history? Right? It's Avram Avinu. So it's very interesting. Isn't it interesting that Avram is the one who's told, go to Lech Lecha Me'artzecha El Aretz Asher Ara'eka, which is what? It's not Israel. It's Yerushalayim specific. Right? And who was Avram? He's the first person to what? To believe in God. So all the concepts come together. You have Avram, the first person to believe, coming to Yerushalayim, which is the foundation, the place of right, the foundation of the world, which corresponds to the foundation of all mitzvot and emunah. All these concepts share this commonality. So now if you think about it, right? If I want to pick the point of Yerushalayim that represents the deepest part of our emunah, it's the Kotel HaMaravi. Why was the Kotel never destroyed? It's a fascinating question they have to stop and ask. From a political perspective, it makes no sense. From a social political perspective, it makes zero sense that the Kotel is still standing. The Arabs had plenty of opportunities throughout history to knock it down. You know, we see how they celebrate when they blow us up, when they destroy our shuls, and when they take over Gush Katif. We know how they respond. It would have been a great thing that they would have laughed at it. They could have knocked it down and said, "Your God is dead." It's evidence that we once owned this area. They don't want that sitting there. Right? And there were times in history where it was essentially a garbage dump, but why didn't they dismantle the thing? Right? Again, from a political perspective, there's no answer that's going to be sufficient. You know what the real answer is? The real answer is the Medrash in Shir HaShirim. The Medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah says that the Kotel will never be destroyed. If the Torah says something, that becomes the reality. As soon as the Medrash makes that statement that the Kotel will not be destroyed, it doesn't have to make sense. It makes no sense. Again, from a political perspective, why didn't the Arabs destroy the Kotel? It's because the Torah guaranteed that it would last forever. So if Yerushalayim is the place of Emunah, the foundation of our faith, right? It's the place that Avram, the first ma'amin, the first believer in God, was sent to. The Kotel represents the part of our Emunah that what? That can't be destroyed. Just like the Kotel can never be destroyed, there's a part inside of a Jew that can never be destroyed. And that's what we believe. Why is it not possible to convert to another religion? Why don't we believe in that concept? If a Jew says, I'm abandoning Judaism, and he becomes Christian, right, let's say he even becomes a high-ranking official of the church.
Same story in Israel.
Right? Yeah.
The Achdaniel, he converted. Who's that? And he had to come back to Judaism.
Oh, really?
Achdaniel, the huge after the founding of Israel, it was a huge case where he wanted to, by rights of being a Jew, to come back to claim that he's a Jew. And it went all the way to the High Court. And
really?
But once you convert out of Judaism and you accept another religion, you lose your rights.
Interesting.
And he wasn't allowed.
So from a Torah perspective, that's not at all what we believe, right? From a Torah perspective, it's not possible to convert out of Judaism. Why is that so? Why should that be? I mean, it seems like it's unfair, right? A person can scream and kick and scream and say, I hate Torah, I hate God, I don't believe in Judaism at all, and we'll still say, that's nice, but you're Jewish. And they say, but I hate Judaism. I completely abandon it. And we say, that's very nice, but we still hold that you're a Jew. But I'm the Pope. I don't care. You're a Jew. Right? Why is that so?
We have a unique neshama. We have a neshama that's very different.
Right? So it's impossible to uproot that part of our neshama that believes. So if a person, essentially it works like this. If you want to convert to Judaism, what do you have to do? To convert in, what do you have to do? You have to be 100% willing to accept the Torah. If I say I'm willing to do 99% of the mitzvahs, but shatness is not for me, right? I still want to wear suits that are made out of wool and linen. So we say that's very nice, but you can't convert to Judaism. We need 100% commitment. That's how conversion works. So the same thing is true converting out of Judaism. The only way to convert out of a religion is if you believe 100% in the new religion. So you could tell me that you 100% believe in Christianity, but you know what we say to you? That's not true. It's maybe 99.999%, but deep, deep down inside, there's a part of you that does not really believe that. And you could kick and scream and say, I'm telling you I do believe it. And we'll say, that's not true. Deep down inside, there's a part of your neshama that cannot be destroyed, a light that cannot be extinguished. That's the inheritance we have from Avraham Avinu. When we say in Shemoneh Esrei, Magen Avraham, right? The protector of Avraham, that's the part inside of us that's protected as a spiritual inheritance. It's part of our spiritual DNA. It's not possible to uproot it under any circumstance. And that's what the Kotel represents.
It comes from Adam Rishon. That we become, that every person has a spark, but the Jew,
Avram's the one who really,
he's the first one who believes, who recognizes Hashem.
Right, and that's the idea, meaning this concept of Amunah, which is Yerushalayim, which is the Kotel in particular, that can never be destroyed, is the part of Amunah in a Jew that can never be destroyed. So you're right, yes, Adam certainly gives us spiritual inheritance to the world. But the Chiddush Erev, the first Ger Rebbe, said, Magen Avraham means that there's a part that Avram earned, that his children are protected in that way. Unfortunately, on a surface level, yeah, many Jews stray. But deep down, Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin says that when the shofar blast comes at the end of days, and Hashem says, Mashiach's here, the biggest heretic can be the first one online to greet Mashiach. That's what he says. Because deep down, all the things that are piled up on top of that part of us that really wants to believe, whether it's the philosophies that we have, or whatever it is, the desires that we have, all the things that are blocking us from getting to that point, they just all crumble away, and he says everyone's going to come running. They'll see the biggest non-believer is going to be the first one online to shake Mashiach's hand. That's what Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin says.
My friend's daughter had a bat mitzvah on Sunday. They used to up in their house, in their backyard. And on Monday, they had a Nigerian convert married a Baroque girl.
Wow.
Why am I telling you this? Because in the time we're saying that the heretics will come back. Before the Mashiach, whoever becomes a convert, that's right. Their last opportunity to recognize Hashem as the Jewish God. As a Jew. Meaning, once Mashiach comes, you can't convert to Judaism. You can recognize God and accept the seven Noahite misfit laws, but you can become a Jew. And so I've heard about three Orthodox conversions recently within the last year or so. And this was the most recent when he converted.
How did he come to Judaism?
I don't know, but they've been dating for many years. It's been a 7-year ongoing process for him to convert.
Wow.
And so you had the whole Nigerian side that showed up, and then you had the whole Baropop side that showed up.
That's
and
wild.
You had two different DJs.
They did, yeah.
They got married in the Spanish Jewish shul, and then they had the reception by a mutual friend asked if they can host it there, because they knew that they were putting this tent up. And it was a last minute. The girl decided, we've been going out for so many years, he's finally converting, let's have the wedding. What am I waiting for? I'm 35 years old.
Wow.
Apparently, they met in college 7 years ago.
Wow.
And
it's pretty wild.
It's wild.
That's amazing. Yeah, so that's, it's very, very Mashiach-dick, the restoration of sparks. But this explains, by the way, why you can have a secular person who is not Shomer Torah Mitzvot, doesn't keep kosher, doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep Tarat HaMashpacha. The person comes to the Kotel, and all of a sudden, they break down. What are they so emotional all of a sudden? Nothing in Torah ever moved you before. All of a sudden, you're standing by this old wall, and all of a sudden, you're so emotional. The answer is because you've come to the place of connection. You're standing at the place that taps into that part of you. It awakens that part of you that can't be destroyed. And all of a sudden it rises to the surface, and it's just, I never felt anything like this before. Because you're physically in the place that represents the foundation of our faith. So this is just, a little bit of an insight. Again, obviously Eretz Yisrael in its entirety is holy. But really the bracha of Lech Lecha Me'artzacha that was said to Avraham, to the land that I will show you, doesn't take place until he comes to Yerushalayim. Because Yerushalayim is really, the heart and soul of the Jewish people. It's the Amunah, it's the backbone of our faith. It's Avraham Avinu. It's really the foundation of everything. I'll just conclude, and then we'll go to Pirkei Avos with one interesting gematria. I saw Rav Moshe Wilson brings a very interesting gematria. He says the gematria of the word Yerushalayim is 586. He says that's the same gematria as Vayahaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe Avdo. Because when you come to Yerushalayim, that Amunah in Hashem comes pouring out. The Amunah in Moshe, Toras Moshe, Zichru Toras Moshe, right? Moshe being the transmitter of Torah, comes pouring out, and you just feel the connection. Now it's interesting, most places in Tanakh, Yerushalayim is spelled without a Yud. I mean, obviously the first Yud is there, right? But the second Yud, it's Yud, Resh, Vav, Shin, Lam, and Mem. That's how we normally spell it. And it makes a lot of sense, because the letter Yud, in the deeper Svarim, is always a reference to Chachma. Yud means wisdom, right? Like Az Yashir. So if you look at Rashi on Az Yashir, why is it Az Yashir? He says Yud has to do with, you know, with Seichel and Chachma. So it's very appropriate that the Yerushalayim, spelled without that second Yud, it's not the Yerushalayim that we come to through knowledge and through understanding. It's the Yerushalayim with just simple faith. Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe Avdo. That's what Yerushalayim means to us. It's a place where we connect deeply to our faith in Hashem. So, you know, that gives us a little perspective on what we're so, you know, joyously celebrating today. Yes?
I want to re-emphasize the connection that you're talking about in the hotel. I was on a Jewish Renaissance in December, and we were talking about bringing non-affiliated women to Israel. From across really America and South America, and the percentage of women who become, not all too, but who connect to Judaism and either send their kids to a Jewish school afterwards, or start keeping kosher,
right,
or going to the mikvah, joining a temple, or sending the kids to Jewish school, is huge. It's like over 50% for the majority of what I just listed. Wow. Listed, and some are even higher because of that connection.
Right. It awakens. I mean, it's physically
right.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're standing in the physical place that represents that part inside. It's the Yerushalayim inside of you, and when you stand in that place, it's automatic that it happens. I mean, it's remarkable. It's very evident that it truly happens. I mean, we've seen it. We've all seen it with our own eyes. All right, let's come back to Pirkei Avos. We are in Parak Aleph, Mishnah Yud Gimel. Okay, and again, we're continuing the statements of Hillel. Now, in the previous Mishnah, Hillel told us, "Be like the students of Aaron HaKohen." Right, love peace and pursue peace. Right, it's in the Hebrew English one. It's on page 5. What
was it?
548. And in the all Hebrew one, it should be found after Mincha for Shabbos.
Like
what page?
303.
Oh,
no, it's before. 290.
It should be right after Mincha for Shabbos.
289.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm not going to read that much inside, but Hillel continues now with another statement, and he says, Huaya Omer, this is Mishnah Yud Gimel, Negid Shema Avad Shemei. Let me just read through it, and he'll tell me what's funny about this Mishnah. Negid Shema Avad Shemei, Udelo Mosif Yasef, Udelo Yalif Ketala Chayev, Udi Ishtamash Betaga Chalaf. What language are we speaking here?
I don't know.
Right? I mean, it sounds a little funkier than some of the Hebrew words we've had. I mean, the last Mishnah was pretty easy. Havimi Talmidav Shal Aharon, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. I mean, all of a sudden, it's a little, it's like a different dialect over here. It's Aramaic. Hillel's writing in Aramaic. Very strange. Lubav Trebi asks, why all of a sudden do we have a Mishnah in Aramaic? So he says it's an expression of what he just taught us. Hillel taught us in the previous Mishnah, listen, be a student of Aaron. What does it mean to be a student of Aaron? Love people. Right, pursue peace, be makari of people to Torah. Says the Lubavitch Rebbe, you know what most people spoke in the times of the Mishnah?
Aramaic.
The average person spoke Aramaic. Sure. This Mishnah is in Aramaic because Hillel wants to show I practice what I preach. Mm-hmm. Right? I just taught you a minute ago you're supposed to teach people. Well, maybe I should write my statements in a way that it's more accessible to more people. That's exactly what he does here. He speaks to us, he conveys his message in Aramaic. But it's very interesting, if you look at what his message is, a lot of his message has to do with learning Torah. Let's just go through it for a second. The first point is that, Negad Shema Avad Shemei, one who pursues his name, one who looks to advance his name, he's acting simply for his own honor, Avad Shemei, he'll lose his name. Person who wants to, right? Person who is given an appointed position, and all he wants is to, you know, again, to gather fame for himself, so very quickly he'll lose himself. I saw one sefer, interestingly explained, Negad Shema, if you try to be someone you're not, Avad Shema, you lose out in both worlds. Meaning if I try to extend myself in a way that's not true to myself, the group I'm trying to fit in with, they know I'm a faker. They're not going to accept me. But at that point, now that I've labeled myself as part of that, you know, that upper class group, now I try to go back to my old friends and say, well, you're not one of us anymore. So you lose both worlds. You destroy yourself if you exert yourself in a way that's inappropriate. Nigad Shema, if you pursue your name, Avad Shema, you lose not only the new name that you're trying to pursue, right, but even the old name that you once had, the reputation you once had, will be lost as well. But the rest of his statements have to do with Torah study. First of all, he says, Udalo Mosif Yosef. If you're not adding on, you're going down. Right? Judaism, we believe, is an escalator. Right? Where you're walking against the downward moving escalator. If you're not constantly moving, automatically you're going, you can't stand still, it's not an option. If you're standing still, automatically you're going to descend. So Udalo Mosif, if you're not constantly adding on, you're going down. And this is really a fundamental point of what it means to be a Jew. That as Jews, we're always striving for more. I'll just share with you the Noam Elimelech, Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk, the great Hasidic Rebbe. So he writes in Parshas Tazria about this concept. How Jews, we have to be growing. Right? And it's hard sometimes because we get into a rut and we feel like, you know, I'm doing okay with my life and I'm a fairly decent Jew. Right? And everyone knows they have things to work on, but we don't always necessarily live with that attitude. I need to be developing myself. There are things that I should be working on constantly. Right? Both actively and more passively. But there's always things that are in motion. So he explains the pasuk in Tehillim. Listen to this, a very beautiful explanation. Yom li yom yabia omer. Right? We say it in the davening of Shabbos, Tehillim Perek Yutes. Yom li yom yabia omer. Here's what he says. Nearly, it appears to me, dinei b'nei adam ha'holchim shovev b'derech libam, achar shtuseim v'hev lehem. He says, foolish people who just do what they want, essentially do what they want. Az ein hefresh eslo, then there's no difference by him from day to day. You don't see change. A person who does what he wants, it's not really growing. You'll have the same interests from the time you're a little kid to the time you're an adult, right? You're never seeking, you know, higher wisdom. Ukamosha misnag yom etmo kenayom, as he was today, as he was yesterday, so he is today. Kein machar, that's how he'll be in the future. V'lo yosif das v'seichal, he doesn't add intellect. He's not interested in seeking more. Aval hatzadikim ha'ochem b'darche Hashem. But again, a Jew, a tzaddik, an amech kulam tzaddikim, we're all tzaddikim. Someone who's longing for more. V'avodaso az kol yom v'yom yavin v'yaskil yoser v'yoser. Every day, he's seeking new opportunities to better himself or herself. Mashalo hischeletmo, what he wasn't able to grasp and understand the day before. U'v'chol yom yosef piv ledavar chachmos. He's constantly looking for more. So he says, you know what the pasuk means? Yom li yom yabia omer. The word yabia could be an expression. He quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya, Mayim tiva'esh, that fire causes the water to boil. Yabia is a lashon of boiling. What happens when you watch a pot boiling? Right? It's jumping. It's leaping. Yom li yom yabia omer. Every day you should be like those bubbles boiling, jumping up. Right? Leaping for more. And what's so interesting is, right, shenasa kamin ababos, you should be like the bubbles, hanigbam lamala, that they're jumping up. What's so interesting is, what happens when those bubbles jump up? They all come crashing down, right? And yet they're still trying to jump up. They're still leaping forward. The bubble pops up for a second, but even that's significant. As Jews, we have to be the types of people who have this attitude that we're always interested in adding on more. Right? With the low Moses, if you're not adding Yosef, there's no standing still. You can't, it just doesn't work. Right? The world is moving too fast. The escalator is moving too fast for you to, you know, to just be resting on the escalator. Keep climbing for more. And even if your bubble's going to burst, the reality is you have to be striving for more. Right? To change, to develop.
Hashkecha, Fratzi. My friend dragged me last night to a brain game she had in her house.
Okay, who is this?
Amy Atiti.
That's what I thought.
You know Amy?
I know she has her. Okay, I was just talking to my wife about this today.
Love Amy. So I ran out there last night. I was tired. I didn't want to go. And I said, okay, Amy's asking. I have to go. And they had this wonderful woman there. What's her name? It's my name. Nechama Dina. Who was leading the Fabrengen, and they're talking, and I asked her, they're talking about Emunah, how you start with it, and I asked her a very pointed question about what we've discussed, how do you bring the Emunah
right.
to our children, that they'll really buy in and not just go on cruise control.
Right.
She calls up her 13-year-old daughter, who was mm-hmm. there babysitting her, 6-week-old, and she goes, Hashkecha Pratzit, that my daughter's here. It's a 13-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. I addressed the question to her, how do you get enthusiastic and passionate about Yiddish, guy? How are you so into it and want to do more? She goes, it's so simple. I said, so tell me. And so I mentioned your name. I said, I know someone just like that. She goes, I don't know how she brought the story in, but it's like they asked the shlicha who's going out to the unknown world, how aren't you afraid you're going to lose your passion, your commitment, your zest for Judaism and for the mitzvah? She goes, what are you talking about? I'm boiling over. I'm constantly percolating, and I draw the energy from the cool water, because now the cool water is not going to put her out. She goes, well, it's the opposite. They're not going to put me out. I'm going to cause them to boil over. Yeah. So I said, how do you get this constant boiling over? She goes, because you have to have a Rebbe. I said, you're connected with the Rebbe? Okay, this is a Crown Heights thing. I mean, he's been dead for... She goes, yes, I have. And everyone, majority of the people there were Chabad. They feel this connection to the Rebbe. Love Hashem. Yes. It's a beautiful thing. And she goes, and so you might not have the Rebbe, but everybody has to have
something
a person that
could, for it.
Right? To help them percolate. And I said, I know someone who's doing that. It's a DABC and that.
Right.
And the solo. That's what, and there are some great role models out there, but they need someone to keep them percolating, right. To keep, talking about percolating.
So that's
they
right.
Need that. They need that something, that flame, to keep them right. Going so that they won't be put out.
Something to, something to leap towards.
Right. I think it's beautiful. This is from a 13-year-old, and I'm saying, wow, how beautiful.
She got it. She definitely got it.
That's impressive.
Yeah. But so this is really, you know, it answers really an amazing question about Kabbalah Satara. This is a question that bothered me for a long time. I'm sure if we haven't thought of this question, as soon as I say it, you'll say, yeah, it's a good question. Hashem comes to give the Torah to the world. So he goes around to all the different nations of the world to offer them the Torah. He comes to Esav. Hey, Esav, you know, people of Esav, are you interested in the Torah? Sure, it sounds great. What's in it? Don't kill. Well, that's not fair. I mean, that's our thing. Right? We're the Midah of Gvura. Right, that's why Yitzchak loved Esav so much. Yitzchak said, well, I'm Gvura also. Okay, Yitzchak's Gvura was internal Gvura. Esav's out killing people. It's a misplaced Gvura, but it's the same Midah. Killing that, no, we can't handle that. Sorry, not for us. Okay, Yishmael, how about you guys? You're interested in the Torah? Sounds nice. What's in it? Right, no Gilei Ariot. You have to be careful about, you know, sexual immorality. That's not our thing. Sorry, we can't accept that. Hashem comes to the Jews. You guys want the Torah? Sure, we'd love the Torah. Okay, great, you got it. Why didn't Hashem have to... Now, the simple answer is we said Nasa v'Nishma. We didn't ask what's in it. We took it right away. That's why we were able... But the Shem Yishmuel quotes from his father. He says, it's still not really fair. Hashem should have to give us that same test. Tell us something against our very nature and see if we're still willing to accept the Torah. So it says the father of the Shem Yishmuel, he says, he did. Hashem did. What was it? What was the thing Hashem told us? You want the Torah? Fine, but I'm going to ask you to do something against your nature. And it's really such a brach in disguise. What was it? Hashem says, good guess. Hashem says, when we come to the mountain to get the Torah, you have to show restraint. You're only allowed to go so far up the mountain. Right? Says the Avnei Nezer, the father of the Shem Yishmuel, but that's against our essence. As Jews, our essence is we just want to climb and climb and climb. You can't put the Kedusha in front of us and then say, hold back. That's such a tease. So, on the one hand, it reveals the essence of a Jew. The essence of a Jew is someone who's always longing for more. And Hashem made the test even harder because he said 3 days in advance, everyone has to separate from their spouses. What was the point? Stop loving another human being and only love Hashem. So that's really, I mean, he's really teasing us. Hashem says, fall in love with me, but then show restraint. Right? It's against our nature. It's completely against our nature. But we said, you know, we'll do our best to hold back. But it shows that, you know, when Hashem is not asking you to hold back, we should be jumping, we should be leaping forward. We should be jumping out of our skin. We should be so excited to change it, to grow. You know, one of the rabbis at TABC, who's looking for a shidduch, he's older, he's in his 50s, and he told me a very funny story. He said I could repeat this story. It's Rabbi Grossman from TABC, wonderful rabbi, very good person. If anyone knows anyone who's appropriate for him, maybe we can work on that situation.
Okay.
Always trying to think of someone for him. But he told me the following story, and I asked, I said, can I tell the story over in your name? He said, you can tell the story over in my name. It's a great story that highlights this idea. He had gone out with a woman a number of years ago, and you know, many years ago, and not so long ago again, someone called him about this woman. He didn't remember the name, it had been a long time, and he agreed to go out. He says, she comes to the car, she gets in the car, she says, I went out with you once before. So she says, it didn't work then, I don't want to go out again. So he says, okay, you know, I respect that if that's what you want to do. He says, but let me just tell you something. He says, I teach high school boys. He says, I see how they come in ninth grade. He says, I see them 5 years later when they come back from Israel. And let me tell you, people change quite a bit. He says, just because it didn't work 5 years ago, who's to say it's not going to work now? And she says, you know what? You're right. They went on a date. Unfortunately, you know, I wish it would have been great if the story had had that punchline. What? Oh, yeah?
My
oh, really?
My sisters did, yeah. My sisters married to Zalewski.
People change.
Zalewski's?
No, I don't know who that is.
So she went out, you know, Florence and Mills
Lewis? Yes.
Oh, so my sister went out with David, and 2 or 3 years later, it didn't work out. She spent a Shabbos by Honey Center, very close friends of my parents. She was taking her boards in New Jersey, Connecticut, and she was walking to shul with Honey, and David's younger brother Yosef and Dr. Zalewski were walking home from shul, and Yosef saw my sister, and he turns to his father and comes home to Florence and goes, I met the perfect girl for David. Mm. Calls up David and goes, I met the girl because I dated her already.
Right.
I'm not going out with her again. And he said, well, I think she's a fool. She's perfect. A few months later, they were engaged. He said, you know what? And I've heard other stories
and
about that,
my cousin got married to a girl that he had dated 7 years before.
Right.
Yeah.
And 7 years before, he was intimidated by her, mm-hmm. but he's no longer intimidated.
Apparently not.
Very
right,
exactly.
Apparently not.
It's all about time. It's also
right.
timing.
Been right. But the point is, Jews were changing. We're not, you know, it's anti-Jewish to look at it as, oh, well, I met this person once upon a time. So if they're practicing what Judaism's about, we're changing. We're like those bubbles who are, you know, constantly jumping and leaping and bursting. And Aleiv Simcha, the Ger Rebbe one time, he summoned someone to him. He called this young man to come to him. This man was a sofer. So he delayed a few moments before coming to him. When he came to the Rebbe, he said, you know, I want to apologize to the Rebbe. This is the fifth Ger Rebbe, I'm sorry, the Aleiv Simcha. He said, I just want to apologize to the Rav. I would have been here earlier, but I was in the middle of writing Shem Hashem. The halacha is, you're not allowed to pause in the middle of writing Shem Hashem. So the Rebbe smiled and he laughed and he said, you know what? He said, we're always in the middle of Shem Hashem. Shivisi Hashem lenegdi tamid. Right? Place Hashem before you at all. We're always in the middle of Shem Hashem. As Jews, we should always see ourselves. We're always in the middle of our service of God. We're never at a point where, you know, now I'm at a resting point. Now I'm done. Right? We're always looking for more opportunities. And that's what this Mishnah is expressing. If you're not adding on, then you're going down. You're undermining what Judaism's all about. What's the next statement? Let's see if we can just finish up the Mishnah, get through the Mishnah. Udelo yalif ketala chayev. Okay, a very harsh statement as well. A person who's not learning literally deserves death. Why? Because again, you're undermining the whole purpose of the world. Right? The world that Hashem created lasts and exists only in the merit of Torah. Torah keeps the world existing every moment. There's not a second that someone in the world is not learning Torah. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh says Hashem set up time zones for this purpose. So while some people are sleeping here, people are learning on the other side of the world. To make sure there's never a second in the history of the world that's devoid of Torah. But learning is something, you know, that's almost very uniquely Jewish. Right? It's a concept. When the Divrei Chaim, the Tzanzer Rebbe, was in Vienna once for some medical reason. Everyone always ended up in Vienna for medical things. A lot of big tzaddikim were always in Vienna for, you know, medical care. So the Divrei Chaim was in Vienna, and he's talking to this doctor, and the doctor sees that he's learning. And he says, you guys have it right. He says, we, the older generation, saying, you know, he's an older doctor, he says, you know, we appreciate learning. He says, but the younger generation, right, secular people, the younger generation, they don't appreciate learning. He says, the Jews have it right. They're always learning. They're always interested in learning more. There's so much to learn. The younger generation thinks they know everything already. Right? Udelo yalef ketala chayev. If you're not learning, it really goes hand in hand with the previous statement. If you're not adding on, if you're not learning, so then what are you living for? Right? Life is an opportunity to learn new things, you know, at all times. You know, literally till the end of one's life. When the Vilna Gaon was on his deathbed, I mean, this is an extreme example, but when the Vilna Gaon was literally on his deathbed, and his family's waiting outside, right, and the doctor comes out of the room, and the family says, where is he holding? Right, what's doing? Where is he holding? So the doctor turns to them and he says, he's holding by the 13th parak of Mishnayis Kalim. He said, what are you talking about? You know, like, hey, where... He says, I saw his lips moving, and I bent down and I listened very carefully. His mom, Mishnah, you know, he could barely, and he's reciting Mishnah by heart.
Wow.
You know, that's the Vilna Gaon, okay. It's, you know, Madrigos, Madrigos, Yesh. You know, there are many levels.
Yeah.
Right? I always thought what's impressive is that this doctor was able to recognize, I mean, Mishnah's Kalim is like a very difficult section of the laws of Tumah and Tara. You know, the fact that the doctor could hear it and recognize immediately, oh, that's a mission in the 13th Barak of Kalim.
Only you would know.
I thought that's pretty... I thought the doctor himself must be pretty impressive.
Yes.
But, you know, where are we holding, right? That's my life. The Vilna Gaon was able to maintain his life and hold on because he's learning. So that's what it means. If a person's not learning, He's undermining his life. Learnings of something as Jews we appreciate at all times, right? And it doesn't have to be specific, you know, if a person's studying in college. So he's studying things for the most part. Yes, there are, you know, are there classes that you'll take just for one's own knowledge? Although nowadays, people, it's almost like a lost art, learning like lishma. You know, I'm saying the world is more interested in entertainment and having a good time, and we're too busy with our cell phones and our iPads and all that stuff. You know, the typical college kid is not going to learn to just learn about life. Right? The art of learning is very much lost. But in Judaism, you know, learning is something, and again, it's not limited to that subject. If I want to be a lawyer, so I study law. Right? In Judaism, I'm not only studying subjects that are relevant right now. I mean, half of the Gemara is things that don't apply nowadays. Many areas of the Torah, it doesn't necessarily apply to me on a day-to-day type of way, or it should maybe, but I don't always see it that way. And yet I'm tapping into something. Now, a tzaddik once said, if you eat matzah in the sukkah, or if you shake a lulav on Pesach, so that doesn't do anything. He says, but if you learn Meseches Psachim on Sukkos, or if you learn about the halachos of Sukkah on Pesach, so that transforms you, right? Torah is relevant at all times. All Torah is relevant at all times to all people. It's not limited in that way, and that's the purpose of life. So delo yalif katalachayv. If a person stops the learning, so then of course he's undermining his existence. And lastly, udishtamish betaga chalaf. One who exploits the crown, chalaf withers away. Right, again, this warning that yes, involve yourself in Torah, spend your life learning and growing in Torah, but it should never be used in a way that it's self-serving. You know, one of the greatest people went astray because of this. Right, one of the great Tanaim, one of the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir, contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, whom I refer to, Elisha ben Avuya. Where I tell the story of Elisha ben Avuya, he went astray, he went off the derech, a voice came out of the Shemaim and said, you can't even do tshuva. And he goes and says, you know, why should I buy? We spoke about him once, I think. Maybe Tu B'Shvat time, I think we spoke about him. Right, the voice came out of Shemayim and said, you can't do tshuva, you're done. And he basically gave up at that point. What went wrong with him? So the Talmud Yerushalmi says, you know where it all started? It started at his own bris. At his bris, his father was a very wealthy man. Avuya was a very wealthy man, one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim. And he invited Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua and many of the great tzaddikim of the time to come to the bris. At the bris, everyone's enjoying the meal. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua say, listen, while everyone's doing their thing, right? Jews are eating, everyone's doing their thing, we're going to go do our thing. And they go off to a side room to start learning a little bit. And a fire descends from the Shemaim and surrounds them. And Avuya looks up and he sees, you know, the other room's on fire. He goes running in. He says, what's going on in there? You trying to destroy my house? They said, no, we're not destroying your house. We're learning and this is a holy fire. And he says, if this is the power of Torah, I want to dedicate my son to Torah. But the Yerushalmi says it was coming from a very negative place. He wanted to wear that. He wanted to exploit the crown. He wanted his son to do magic tricks, that he should be able to bring fires from the heaven, and that his son should be able to, you know, to tap into this mystical wisdom, right? And that's why when Elisha ben Avuya goes up into the Pardes, like the Gemara describes, he enters, you know, the outer world using different Kabbalistic names of God. He goes off the derech. He loses everything completely, because he wanted to get high on Torah, but it was coming from a very negative place. So the Mishnah warns us, yes, try to experience Torah, you know, get into the Torah. Here we are, this last year before Shavuos, right? We should all enjoy the Torah, we should add on to our Torah knowledge, we should always be, you know, accepting the Torah anew. At the same time, be careful, make sure your motives are pure. Don't do it to be more righteous than someone else, to put someone else down. Don't do it, right, to advance your own honor. Negad Shema, Avad Shema. If you're doing it for self-serving reasons, you're going to destroy yourself. So we should all have a sincere Kabbalah Satorah. Thank you all for coming. Enjoy the rest of the week. And a good Yom Tov to one and all.
Yeah, there's no share next week.
No share next week. Unfortunately not.